Hello, and welcome to the Checks and Balance Podcast. I'm your host, John Abruzzi. And guess what, guys? You're in for a very special treat today. It's an exciting day. For me, for you, for everybody. You want to know what that is? Today is the very first episode of the Checks and Balance Podcast. I'm excited. I hope you guys are. I hope you guys enjoy. This is going to be the very first one, so there's going to be some bumps and bruises along the way, but, you know, we're going to stick with it, and we're going to iron those out along the way. This podcast, I'm going to give you a little introduction about myself. Why did I start the Checks and Balance Podcast? I'm also going to touch on the political discussion that's going on with the state lockdowns right now. I think that's very interesting. My state of California just has initiated some new lockdowns, and we're going to discuss that because I think that's very interesting. There's quite a conundrum. There's two different sides to that story. There's a difference of opinions, as I would like to say. And they're also going to go over the Texas lawsuit that Texas filed against, I think it's four other states. That is an embarrassment to our country. That's all I have to say for it. You know, I'm shocked, amazed that people are still going along with it. And Texas thinks they can tell people what they can do. But we're going to touch on that. And then there's going to be two articles that I read, I think kind of interesting, that discuss the vaccine. So it's going to be interesting. These two stories are pretty interesting. They're kind of funny. So, but let's get started here. First off, let me just reintroduce myself again. John Abruzzi. I'm a 36-year-old dad with four kids. And let's put it this way, multiple baby mamas. I love politics, economics, the stock market, and sports. I'm also currently taking classes right now in finance. Two classes left I got to take in a two-year community college. And then from there, I'll be going to a four-year CSUN. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with California, but I'll be going to CSUN and I'll be junior. And then I'll be focusing more on the stock market and stuff like that. So I'm actually really excited to move on from the two-year and go to a four-year and start narrowing down and focusing more on the stock market and stuff like that. It gives me a different perspective on humanity and the world around us. It's interesting. But it is what it is. So that's a little bit about my background and my life. Now let's get into why I really started Checks and Balance Podcast. Really two reasons, finance and politics. For one, I love politics. I'm a political junkie. I really got into it in the Obama years. I remember when my uncle, he came to me and made me vote for Obama his first term. And that's really when I started really getting involved in watching and picking up and reading and understanding what's going on in the political world. And I want to share my experience with you guys because what I see going on today is a travesty. I don't agree with a lot of things that are going on. I have my opinion. As you could tell, I do not support Trump. I voted against him twice. I think he's a disgrace. I think he's destroying our democracy, literally. He's not following the norms. I know those are cliches, but it's true. I mean, do we really want to give up what we've done for almost 200 and some years? for some guy like this, for a TV show star? I don't think so. And so I really got upset, and I kind of started this podcast so I can, you know, talk about my opinions and get more of a different perspective. And hopefully people of my age, 36, that aren't really politically aware, or I can give them a different, you know, better understanding. You know, because as I'm learning, I'm going to share with you guys. And, you know, I may get some things wrong, but, you know, I'll admit it and call it out. But as long as we can get it right, because that's what it is about at the end of the day. And I want to educate you guys just like I'm educating myself. That's really what it is. That's all it's about. So, and another reason is I love finance. I love the stock market. I love learning about bonds. I love learning about futures, options. I love learning about all that, CDs, you know. And that's why I started, you know, in the school. I wanted to, I started school because I got tired of getting beat by the man. I wanted to be the man. I wanted to, you know, earn some money off my own back. You know, we're investing, you're investing in a company, and the company makes money off those laborers. You know, the laborers are the ones that really bring in the revenue. Without those laborers, you're not going to create revenue. So I wanted to be the guy finally to learn like everybody else, sitting back, investing, making money off of us. You know, if I'm going to go to work, at least I better have some stake in the game. So I learned that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast and go to school, because as I'm learning in school, I want to teach everybody else about the financial awareness and having, you know, being able to put money aside and invest in the market, because that's really what we all should be doing. It shouldn't be just the top 1%, or, I mean, not everybody invests right now. I mean, you don't even, not everybody has a 401k with their jobs. I mean, not all the jobs that I've worked with, I've worked a lot of jobs in my day, and they never really offered a 401k. Not all of them. Some did, some don't. And with today, with a lot of the gig workers, which are 1099 workers, there a lot of them are coming to effect with the Ubers and all of that. The DoorDashes, you know, these people are getting 1099. They're not really getting nothing for the future. I mean, everybody has a Social Security that to fall back on, but really, is Social Security going to be what you want to live on when you are in your retirement age? I mean, not me. So, I mean, I want to learn how to make some extra bucks, and I want to pass it on to my viewers, and I want to pass it on to everybody else, my listeners, I should say. I want to pass, educate, as I learn in the stock market, I will teach you guys. I have a blog right now. It's checksandbalances101.com. I write about finance and politics, and, you know, it's just a love of mine, so I figured, what better way to educate and give back to other people as I learn? That's the best way. It brings a joy to me, and I like helping. And so if I learn, you know, if you guys can learn from my mistakes, because as of right now, I got credit card debt, and I fell into a lot of tax debt early on in life. So, and I'm still making up for that. And I'm going to definitely go over that in the podcast, so you guys will hear about that stuff. And I want to educate you guys on what to do and what not to do and make the same mistakes I did. So those are a lot of the reasons that I created this podcast, because I got love for politics and finance, and it's going to be what I'm going to be learning and doing for the rest of my life. My next job, hopefully will be soon after this pandemic, will be more into the financial field. I'm going to start looking and figuring something else out. So those are my reasons for starting the podcast. I hope you enjoy. If you like those fields, I mean, basically, if you think about it, for another topic, sorry. Politics and finance together, in my opinion, equal economics. Economics is politics and finance mixed together. And so that's why I usually talk about economics, too, because that is part of finance. And I love economics, too. So I guess it's a three-horse. So, but let's go on to the very first topic that we're going to talk about today. There's a state lockdowns going on, especially in my state. My state of California is actually initiating some pretty harsh ones. They've shut down a lot of businesses, and a lot of people are getting very upset. And I can understand. There's mixed opinions. The other day, I was actually at the barbershop. Happened to actually be there right on, luckily, because she told the lady that owns it, told me, she happened to cut my hair. She was telling me today was the last day and she had to shut down. And I mean, she was sad. I really felt bad for her. And then I was overhearing all the guys there. They're, you know, blaming Newsom for the shutdown, what to do, what the, you know, why are they doing this? They're losing their job. The business is shutting down. She's losing money. And this is all going on during Christmas time, which, I understand. I completely understand. It's a tough situation we got going on right now. And then I get home, and then I talk to friends that own the tattoo shop, and same thing. They got their business going down. They have to shut down. And they also are upset at the governor, and which is completely understandable. I wish we had another way of figuring out a way to keep the businesses open and also stop the spread, because really that's the whole point of the government locking down and doing their shutdowns. I mean, I look around. For me, I don't just blame the local and, you know, the local governors, because I look around and I notice the states that aren't shutting down, they have worse problems than our state in California that are shutting down. The other day I looked up some numbers just to see, like, you know, what was going on. I wonder if it was true, if California is shutting down and all that is, you know, it's bogus. Leaving open is better, herd immunity, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I went in, check this out, check some numbers, you know, population and blah, 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 just to see. And I wanted to see the top states that have, you know, viruses, top cases, okay? And, of course, California, Texas, and Florida. California, strict rules, you know, strict guidelines, strict stay-at-home orders. You know, Texas and Florida, zero rules. They're against masks. They're against stay-at-home orders. They're against everything you can name it. So I thought, okay, well, the top three, one of them shut down and two of them don't. So I was like, let's run some numbers and see if what theory is actually doing better. Because I don't want to just blame our local governor Newsom here and, you know, not, you know, look at other people and see their theory and see if it's actually really working. So what I did is I looked up some numbers. I looked at each state's population at first, and then I looked up the cases that each state has, and then I looked up their deaths each state has, and then I ran some numbers and wanted to share them with you guys. I looked on basically it's a per capita basis, so we're going to find out, like, because you can't really tell by the population. California has got 39.5 million people, while Texas got 29 and Florida's got 21. You can't really tell, like, what philosophy really works until you do it, like, on a per capita basis. So, like, you know, for, let's say, like, for every 2-to-1, you know, that's what, like, per capita basis would be. So, like, California, let's do this population to per cases. So I did a population to per cases data, and let's see what we got here. So California's got 39.51 million people. In cases of coronavirus, they got 1.49. So that would give us, for every 27 people that we have, we got one person catching coronavirus. Okay? So let's see what Texas got. Texas got 29 million people and 1.4 million cases. Okay? So for every 20 million, for every 20 people, they have one case. See, we have 27 people. For every 27 people, we have one case. For over in Texas, for every 20 people, they got one case. Okay, so let's check out Florida. They got 21.48 million people. In cases, they got 1.09 cases. That also is 20-to-1. So population to per cases, so they have more people catching it on a per capita basis, 20-to-1. Us is 27. They're catching it at a faster rate on a per cases basis. So let's go on this next one that I looked up. It was population to death, okay? So once again, California's got 39.51 million people. And in deaths in California from the coronavirus, 20,636. So that gives us, for every 1,914 people, we got one death, okay? So let's check Texas. Texas got 29 million again. Remember that? But they got 23,967 deaths. That means for every 1,209 people, they got one death. So we got 1,914 in California. Them, it's 1,209. No restrictions. Remember that. Now, Florida, they got 21,000,048 people, okay? 19,590 deaths. So, for every 1,096 people, they got one death. Okay? Every 1,096, they got a death. California, 1,914. So, as you could see, the restrictions and masks are at least a little bit more preventative, in my point of view. For the last, I'm not going to bore you on numbers, but for the last one, I did cases to death in each one, you know, how many cases each state has and how many deaths. Because to me, that would be a view of like the medical system of how they're handling it. Because if, you know, if you got all these cases and you got more deaths, then that means you're not handling them correctly. You're not getting the proper medical treatment. That's in my view. So what I looked at is cases per death. So look at what we have here. California, 1.49 million cases, right? 20,636 deaths. That is, for 72,000 cases, for every 72,000 cases, they got one death. So 72 cases, one death. Texas, 1.4 million cases, 23,967 deaths. So for every 58 cases, there's one death, 58 to 1. California, 72 to 1. See, so they're even killing them off at a faster clip in Texas. Let's check out Florida. 1.09 cases, okay? 19,590 deaths. That's 56 to 1. So for every 56 cases, they got one death. They're killing them faster than Texas by 2. You know, they got 58 to 1 in Texas. So Florida's 56 to 1. So as you can see, that's what I say, looking at it in that perspective on a per capita basis, you can see that the restrictions actually do help out. They do not increase the problem. They actually help the problem in my point of view, giving those numbers that I recently cited. That's why I don't jump the gun and automatically blame the local representatives or the governors or the local officials, because the local officials have a tough job to do. They have a tough decision to make, and not every decision they're going to be is the right one. And no matter what they do, they're going to have people that are not going to be happy. There's going to be people that are going to be pissed off with whatever decision he makes. It's going to be a 50-50 thing. So what I also look in, besides what I look in those numbers that I just decided on the states, I also look and try to figure out why would they shut down, like, you know, small businesses. Because another argument that I hear is, why do they shut down small businesses but leave open the big box retailers, you know, like the Walmart, the Targets, you know? Why are they leaving those ones open and closing down the small businesses? Well, I mean, I feel bad, and I'm not excusing it, but with, like, I come from a different angle, and I look and I see what is possibility why they might make it. And for one, I first go off of this pricing. Because have you guys when you go to Costco, and you buy in bulk, let's say you buy in bulk, okay? When you buy in bulk, those products individually become cheaper, okay? Like, drug dealers know about this all the time. The more you buy, each individual grams become cheaper. You know, it's economy of scale. You know, the bigger, the more product you get, the cheaper the individual product gets. So the big box retailers are able to keep up with demand and keep the prices low because they are able to buy bigger and bulkier shipments. Okay. I'm not excusing why that. I'm just saying that is why. Because the small businesses, if they say they shut down the big box retailers and the small businesses stay open, their supply is not going to be able to keep up with that demand. So what's that going to do? That's going to drive prices through the roof. Okay. So to stop that, they shut down the small businesses are the ones that really have to take the hit, because on a price, you know, they're going to be able to keep up with the demand by keeping the small, if they shut down the small businesses, because all those people are just going to go to Walmart and the Targets or order off Amazon. They're going to be able to keep up with the demand, keep the prices low. And not to mention these small stores, they don't have the different products, you know, that these big box retailer stores. So it could be also because it's a one-stop shop compared to small stores. You're going to multiple locations, you know, spreading the virus. I'm not excusing it, but I'm just giving you some background. That's what's going on. So you got prices where you got price, you know, that is a big issue. And you got them being able to have the supply to meet the demand. You also got, employment. Look at what they employ. They employ a lot more than the small businesses. Small businesses employ a lot. Don't get me wrong. I understand completely they get a lot. But once again, you're going to unemploy more people if you employ the smaller businesses. So, that's another point of view that they come from. Not to mention they're bigger. The big box retailers are bigger and than the smaller stores, so more space, more moving around. Even though the big box retailers they do limit the people, because I have gone to Target where I couldn't go in. They do limit them in for the most part. But the small retailers, you're congested, and there's a more of a chance that you're going to be able to contagious the virus. So I don't look just at that. I look, you know, at everything. And I also see there's like a federal government disconnect with the states. Because when we have some states like California doing their shutdown, everyone getting pissed off, you have Texas and Florida not doing the shutdown, doing whatever they want the next, you have a disconnect because everybody's doing whatever they want. We need federal guidelines. We need federal uniform. We need everyone to be on the same page. Otherwise, this thing, in my opinion, will never work. You got people just going from state to state. If they don't like the rules, if they're getting contagious, bringing it back. And it's just not going to work. We need a federal uniform policy. Not to mention the federal government. This is an interesting thing. The federal government, they're able to print money. The states, they're not able to print money or run a deficit. They have a budget they have to keep up with. They don't have a printing machine that they can go to. They can't sell, you know, bonds down 30 years down the future. They can maybe also sell municipal bonds, but not treasury and all that type of bonds. So they can't really run a deficit, and they need to stay within their budget. So when they do shutdowns, most of them want to do stimulus because, you know, they would want to help their constituents. That's the way only way they're going to probably stay in power if they do not give relief and shut down at the same time. You're stopping them from making money, but then at the same time you're not giving them money. So trust me, if they could, they would be giving money. That's why I say there's a federal disconnect. The federal government should be backing these states up. Especially if there's a shutdown, they need to be able to print more money and give us more stimulus. There's countries around the world that are giving their people, you know, anywhere from $1,200 to $3,000 a month in stimulus payments. That's monthly. We got $12,000 for, what is it, 8 months? Come on, guys. Benefits are running out, and it's a complete mess. We got to figure something out, because what's going on right now, the federal government is just, they're lackadaisical, and I really find it interesting. And I remembered back in the day that during the bailout of 2008, when what was it, Freddie Mac and the banks needed their, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae needed their bailout in 2008. And I was like, I wonder how much that was. And you know, who was behind it? And, you know, what was that all about? So I looked it up. I looked on ProPublica. And it was $635 billion the Senate gave out back then. This was to the banks. You know, they needed, you know, the banks needed a bailout. So the Senate okayed it. So I was wondering, who were the people that okayed this, you know, this bill to the banks? Because when the banks need money, you know, the government, the federal government, finds their wallet open and finds time to, you know, because they are, the Senate is the, they control the purse, they control the money. So when the big banks and their donors need the money, need that bailout, you know, they're ready to give that money. So I wanted to see if one person in particular voted for this bill, Mitch McConnell. And why Mitch McConnell? Because he's Senate Majority Leader right now. He has a lot of power over the purse. He can give a lot of money out right now if he wanted. So I went and I looked up on the Senate.gov, and on that bill, it shows, you can go look on that bill and see who, what senator voted and what they voted and if they voted yay or nay. And sure enough, Mitch McConnell for the stimulus package in 2008 to Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. He voted yay for $634 billion to all these banks. I mean, on this list, we got Freddie Mae, AIG, General Motors, Citigroup, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, Chrysler, Morgan Stanley. I mean, you got cars, you got autos. You know, everybody that needs money, big industry. You know, they willing to handle it out. But, you know, when we need to figure out if we need to shut down the small ones, small businesses or the big businesses, you know, they're tight with their money. They're very tight with their money. This is a clear example. How come in 2008, when the banks needed the money, the Senate could figure something out? Right now, the Senate can't work with the House. You know why? Because it comes to find out, Senator McConnell wants one thing. He wants a liability shield for the big corporations again. He wants them to not be liable for if any worker of theirs catches coronavirus while on duty. Okay, not to mention, there is no widespread case of this going on. But why does he right now all of a sudden backing, again, big industry? Why is he so worried about them being sued? I mean, it's understandable. Why is he so worried? And what's funny is no matter what the CDC or guidelines or FDA or anybody puts into place, and they do not follow, they still are not held liable. I mean, I find that interesting that he's fighting for that right now, holding up money that could go to small businesses, you know, payments for that, even direct payments. Well, there's not direct payments in this bill for some odd reason. But he's holding up money for small businesses right now. And I do not, I mean, understand why. Well, I guess I do understand why. He wants his cronies in Wall Street. He wants the big investors to get their money. He wants to get their, well, yeah, they don't want to be sued. He wants them liability free for the big machines, which I find astonishing, and people are gonna allow this. People are gonna allow this. So we have a federal and state disconnect. So I blame that on Trump. I blame that on Mitch McConnell. I don't blame just the local and city governments, because the federal government needs to help out. They have the printing press. They did it in 2008. They printed back then. They did tax cuts for the rich. They can do their civic duty and do what they're supposed to be doing. And they can, you know what? Give some money to the people that actually need some right now. Pay those small businesses. Take care of some payrolls. Do something. Figure something else out. I mean, I figure I thought of one idea of maybe turning the big box retailers into like the Costco's or to like, you know, the for the small businesses, the suppliers. Maybe they would have to supply and figure out a customer thing where they would have to share customers or something. I don't know. But we got to figure something out because what's going on, we got to disconnect with our government. We got local government officials doing whatever the fuck they want. We got people shutting down, not listening to rules. We got people that doing no shutdown, having 18-wheelers backed up to their morgue, their hospital morgues, because they can't be filled. They can't. They're being filled with overfilled with dead people. I mean, I can't even get it out. It's astonishing. That's happening in Texas, where 18-wheelers. I mean, we got other places that are turning people away. We got in Nevada that's turning their one of their parking lots into a hospital unit to help with COVID. I mean, we got shit that's going not right right now, and we got to figure shit out before it just all gets worse. I know the vaccine's out. It's going to help, but it's going to take a long time for everyone to get vaccinated. Everyone is... it's a political issue around that, too, you know? So, people want to take it. People are scared to take it. We got to figure that out, too. We got to encourage people to take it, because if we don't take the vaccine, we're never going to get rid of it. Back in the day when they killed it, what was the last epidemic, 1918? What they did was they didn't kill the vaccine. Vaccines didn't come, you know, that quickly, within a year. They killed it with a mask. All they did was a mask, and they killed that thing. They didn't turn it into a political issue. Americans got together, and they fought like a war. They put a mask on. We can't do that. I had a lot more faith in us. I thought we would be able to kill it as humans. You know, get together and beat this thing and do what we got to do, what science tells us. But it doesn't seem like that's what we're going to do, beat it. It seems like science is going to have to beat it ourselves with the vaccine. So... it is what it is, and we're going to have to do what we're going to do, but I have full belief we're going to get past this one day, and we're going to get back to our lives. We're going to be going back to the Disneylands, the bowling alleys, the movies, hanging out with friends, the balls. We're going to be doing all that shit once again. You see, I believe we'll be back to somewhat of normal third quarter of next year, somewhat, if we can get this vaccine rolled out correctly, and Joe Biden's plan of 100 doses in 100 days, or something like that. We'll... 100 million doses in 100 days. So if we can get people to buy in, we might be all right. So I believe we will. So, but let's go into this next topic. I find outlandish, stupid, disrespectful, dumb, arrogant, and a constitutional crisis. And on our way to dictatorship. I'm talking about the Texas lawsuit that... Texas is suing four other states because they don't like the way they held their election. This guy, Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas, put a little lawsuit together, and he is deciding to take it to the Supreme Court and sue the battleground states of Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin because he does not like the way they held their election. That, I am not joking. It is stupid, dumb. You have no right to tell people what they can and can't, or people can't have the right to tell states how they can hold their elections. Whatever happened to the conservative way of states' rights? I mean, this shit is laughable. I mean, it's laughable, but it's sad at the same time, because look at what our country is going to. We got an attorney general going to Supreme Court and trying to neglect millions and millions of voters because they don't like the way they held their elections. I find that astonishing and very disrespectful and a big problem, because this shit is not going to end. AG Paxton is a idiot. So I went and looked at his website. what is it, Texas Attorney General .gov, and I wanted to see his little press release that he put out. It says, AG Paxton sues battleground states for unconstitutional challenges to 2020 election laws. Yeah, okay. What gives you the goddamn right to tell some state how they can do? But let me read a little thing that he has here. Texas Attorney General Paxton today filed a lawsuit against Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin in the United States Supreme Court. The four states exploited the COVID-19 pandemic to justify ignoring federal and state election laws and unlawfully enacting last-minute changes, thus skewing the results of the 2020 election. The battleground states flooded their people with unlawful ballots and ballot applications while ignoring statutory requirements as to how they were received, evaluated, and counted. Guys. I don't. This is stupid. This is going to be thrown out quickly, not even looked at. No other state has another state to tell them how they can hold their elections or what they can do. Each state has their own laws and how they hold elections, and they actually all have their own Supreme Courts and Senate. So I don't know why this guy is sticking his nose in other people's business, but he is. So then I checked into him a little bit, just to do a little research. And come to find out, he's doing some kiss acid, in my opinion, because Ken Paxton is finding himself in a little bit of heat. According to this New York Times article, the Texas Attorney General, who fought against the Affordable Care Act and mail-in voting, has been accused of wrongdoing by his own aides, and they call for his resignation. So I guess he's got his staff squealing on him, huh? And he comes out to come to find out, I guess, after all, one of his friends, one of his big donors, according to this article, one of his friends, what's his name, Nate Paul, got raided by the FBI for some real estate scams that he's been doing. Well, Mr. Nate Paul didn't really like this. So guess who he went to? Ken Paxton, the Attorney General, longtime friend who he, in 2008, supported with a donation of $25,000. That's funny. So you got a friend. Okay. Donate $25,000. Okay, let me call in a favor. So I guess this Nate Paul calls Paxton in for a meeting, and he tells him he wants the intervention on the guy's behalf. He wants the Attorney General to step in and get the FBI off his back. And I think he even in this article, he even wanted the FBI or the Attorney General to I think he wanted him to investigate them, too. Yeah, he wanted them to investigate the investigators. Oh, that's a Trump move, right? That's that is funny. So talk about Republican privilege there, huh? Just calling, you donate 25. You don't like what the FBI is looking into because you're doing, you're robbing and real estate scams. So you call your friend in, Mr. Paxton, to come in and handle that business, man. I wish we were all of us that are listening to this had that power. Oh, man. And what's funny is also in the New York Times article, I guess in 2015, this Paxton also went to had some security frauds issues and had a political crisis back in 2015, and I guess he still got voted back in. So I could see why this Paxton guy here is highly politically motivated to fight on Trump's behalf, and I guess on Texas' behalf, to bring a lawsuit on the Supreme Court that is so stupid that they think that they could infringe on states' rights. Because you know what he's looking for, guys? We all know. Why do you think he's working this hard? You know? Securities fraud. He's got friends that paid him off $25,000. Have investigators looking because he's looking for a pardon. Remember this name, guys. Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas. Before January 20th, there will be another, 29 days? There will be a pardon for this man. I guarantee it. You could sign, seal, deliver it. I've called pardons going so far, and I see this one coming. He's going to be pardoned, just like the rest of his friends and everybody else. Trump is that. Trump also, I'm calling that. He's either going to pardon himself or he's going to have Mike Pence pardon him. So, it is what it is, guys. It's the time we live in. It's utterly disrespectful. It's un-American. People are out in the open trying to steal this election. I mean, they don't even care no more. They're saying it. Even Trump tweets overturn. So, we just got to be vigilant. And so far, the Supreme Court has held up. Hopefully, they keep holding up. And knock this virus out, this other virus that I call the Republican hoax theories. Because they're our last defense, guys. That's all we got left. I mean, look what Texas is doing. I mean, they're willing to be out in the open to steal votes from, you know, that everybody knows has been illegally casted votes, and they know Trump lost, and they know everything they're spewing is bullshit. But they're still willing to do it out in front, out in the open. They don't give a shit. They don't care. They care about them voters and themselves. So we're going to have to get over it. I believe we will one of these days. I believe in America, and we get past this stuff. It's like the stock market. We always rise. We may have some fluctuation here and there. I mean, I have some problems. But we always rise. So, well, let's move on. I want to talk about another thing, the vaccine. I was reading a couple articles, two interesting articles about it. One was from the New York Times, and another one was from the Business Insider. Let's go over the New York Times New York Times one. This one was interesting. The Trump administration officials passed when PF Pfizer offered months ago to sell the U.S. more vaccine doses. So let me get this straight. When the administration had the chance to buy vaccine, they passed? I mean, I don't understand. Before Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine was approved, highly successful in clinical trials last month, the company offered the Trump administration the chance to lock in supplies beyond the 100 million doses the pharmaceutical maker agreed to sell the government as part of the $1.95 million deal. So yeah, 100 million doses for $1.95 billion is what? $1.95 a dose? Damn, okay. $1.95 a dose, huh? So that would, I guess, with the Pfizer vaccine, it's, I guess, two doses. You need 50. So that's 50 million people. We got close to 350 million people in this world, in this United States. So, yeah, he's about, what, 300 million off? So I guess we didn't need the extra dose. I don't understand the thinking, but the interesting thing about this article is it says this: President Trump plans on Tuesday to issue an executive order that proclaims that other nations will not get the U.S. supplies of its vaccine until Americans have been inoculated. He doesn't have the, I guess this is the Texas here again. He doesn't have the authority to tell a business who their customer, who he can sell to. This is not a dictatorship. This is not a communist country. Is he taking over supply chain? No, he doesn't have the He doesn't have the power to tell companies where they can sell their dosage. I find that funny and pretty stupid, if you ask me. That executive order was mainly for show. That's all it was. The vaccine being produced by Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech, is a two-dose treatment, meaning 100 million doses is enough to vaccinate only 15 million people. Okay, we discussed that. But the thing I found interesting about this, because I've heard about this before, is the German partner. So Pfizer, I guess because the company, I guess U.S. doesn't want to fucking make money. They partnered with a German company, BioNTech, instead of partnering with Americans. So now, instead of us paying and, you know, getting money out of the deal, we're now sending our money to Germany and to other people. So I guess that's a really smart idea. On November 11th, 2 days after Pfizer first announced early results indicating that its vaccine was more than 90% effective, the European announced that it had finalized a supply deal with Pfizer and BioNTech for 200 million doses. A deal they began negotiating months earlier. Shipments could begin by the end of the year, and the contract includes 100 million more doses if they wanted to for an option. So let me get this straight. The European Union negotiated a contract for 200 million doses, with an option to buy 100 million more doses, and we negotiated 100 million. So let's say we can only vaccinate 50 million people. The Europeans, and let's say they're probably going to take up all the other 100. So they have 300 million doses. They're going to be able to vaccinate 150 million. That's three times more than we can vaccinate the people. So that was stupid. I don't understand the thinking. I mean, they're going to be able to vaccinate three to one. Okay, this is another doozy. The government was in July given the option to request 100 million to 500 million additional doses. But despite repeated warnings from Pfizer officials that demand could vastly outstrip supply and AIM urges to pre-order more doses, the Trump administration turned down the offer, according to several people familiar with the matter. Okay, so these guys had option to get 500 million more, 100 to 500 million more. So on top of the 100, we could have had 500 million. So we could have 600 million, which would have vaccinated 300 million people, almost all of our society. And we passed, right? That is, again, in July, they had an option to get 100 million to 500 billion dollars, or 500 million more doses, and they passed. I don't get it. This is the kicker. This is the interesting part, because this tells me a lot. This tells me price is going up. That $1.95 that we had, that is over. In a statement, Pfizer said that any additional doses beyond the 100 million are subject to a separate and mutually acceptable agreement, and the company is not able to comment on the confidential discussions that may be taking place with the U.S. government. You know what that means, guys. So this contract at $1.95 that they had before is out the window. So now, not only do they pass on the doses at $1.95, they have now increased it. So now us, we're going to have to pay for more of this because it's going to come out of our pocket. You know, they're paying it with our taxpayer money. So this great businessman figured out a way to increase the price for the vaccine, or we're going to get it from another company who knows that we were getting it at $1.95 and will bump it up because that's how competition works. So unless they got, you know, he's got some sweetheart deals. I really don't understand that thinking. Once again, it is what it is, guys. That's the government and the federal. That's the federal government thinking that we got. Not only are they disconnecting from our local and state governments and not helping out, they're not even helping us out with the vaccination. They're just, they can't, they, it's a stumble fumble. So hopefully January 20th, we fix it. Another article that I found interesting was this one in the Business Insider. A nurse in the Pfizer vaccine trial said her side effects were so bad, she worried that the virus, she worried she had the virus. But at the end, she said it was worth it. I mean, she experienced, I guess she experienced, this girl's name was Kristen Choi. She felt chills, nausea, and lightheaded. Damn, that's pretty crazy. I mean, I guess it is pretty intense. Choi hadn't experienced any side effects beyond a sore arm when she received the first injection a month earlier. So I guess this is on the second injection. And she got, 104.9 degree. Yeah, that's right. Fever. That was crazy. After months of all of us screening ourselves for a fever as a signal of COVID, I think it was a little alarming first to find myself with a fever like that, Choi told herself. Damn. Yeah, Choi runs a blog, and she wrote this in her blog. Yeah, so I guess that the fever really scared her, because being a nurse, you know the signs and signals to look for, and fever is definitely one of them. Something's going on. She can't be sure that she received the COVID-19 vaccine and not the placebo, but Choi wrote that based on her reaction, she had a strong suspicion she got the vaccine. That's cool. I wonder how she knows. I mean, she's the nurse. She could say. Even after experiencing what may be the worst case scenario based on reports of COVID-19 vaccine reactions in clinical trials, Choi said it was worth it for a chance at developing immunity against the coronavirus. That's cool. Because, I mean, even though she experienced nausea, headaches, and the chills, she still thinks it's a good idea to get the... She was happy with her choice because now she's able to help out with immunity and spreading immunity. Because, I mean, that's the thing that we want at the end of the day. All of us want to get the fuck out of this situation, get immune, and move on to our daily lives. And I'm happy she was honest in this. I'm happy the Business Insider now posted this, because I mean, if they weren't honest, we would never know. I mean, I could see the political backlash they would get for being honest here. You know, they don't want any more negative opinions when it comes to, even though it's not negative, because she said she liked it, and I mean, it was worth it, and doing her civic duty for the community. But it is what it is. I absolutely think that everyone should get the vaccine, Choi said. What I experienced, even though it wasn't really pleasant, was transient. It wasn't an emergency. It went away in just a day. And if I had to go back and do it over again, I would do it again in a heartbeat. So she felt good about herself. She felt she was doing this for like a higher purpose. You know, she probably felt she was doing it for a community, passing on, you know, immunity the correct way and not the catching it way, you know, the vaccine immunity way. You know, as she says here, I mean, she downplays it. It wasn't an emergency, and it went away in just a day. So, I mean, it sounds cool, and it sounds all right. I mean, I don't have no issues with the vaccine. Me personally, I think I'm definitely gonna take it. I trust it. If all the doctors, high profile doctors, sign off on it. And all the regulatory agencies sign off on it, and Fauci signs off on it, I'm going to sign off on it, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get this shit over with and start prolonging this issue. Because if we don't get this shit nipped in the butt now, we're never going to get it over with. So, Choi also wrote in her blog, our bodies Our bodies have to activate our immune system to learn how to fight the virus, which is the whole point of getting the vaccine, Choi said. And part of the activation means that we might experience signs like a fever, chills, nausea, all things that I experience. So she's saying here, like, that's a sign that, you know, the vaccine's working. Our body has to build up our immune system and get ready to shield off the virus. So if we're going to build up immune system and antibodies against this virus, you know, I guess chills, nausea, and fever are a good sign for good sign to have, because your body's building up immunity. I guess that's the first time you're going to kind of want butt chills. Because I guess if you don't have butt chills, are you going to think it's not working? I don't know. I mean, you know, but here's some data. In the clinical trial of the Pfizer vaccine candidate, most volunteers who got the vaccine experienced some side effects. The most commonly reported reactions were at the injection site, 84%, fatigue, 63%, headache, 55%. Fevers were less common with 14%. So I guess she was on the low end with the 14%. So maybe, you know, so I guess we got more of a problem at the injection site. So I guess, if I don't know, I wonder if they had a lot of tattoo people there. You know, 'cause that's interesting. But yeah, right at the ejection site, a lot of people are having issues. Fatigue, 63%. That'd probably be expected, having some fatigue, getting tired. I could understand that. So it's very interesting. I thought that I really wanted to share that that story with you, because with the vaccine going out there and everyone having their opinions, I thought that was interesting that a nurse was bold enough to share her opinions and give what she really thought, and hold no bones about it. So I think we're going to get out of here today. That was a good episode. I hope you really liked it. I'm excited to begin my podcast journey. I hope you like it. I hope you stick around and work through the fumbles and rumbles that I'm going to be going through. I want to educate everybody on what I learned financially and politically. That's the main goal here. You can always go and check my website. My website again is checksandbalances101.com. Up there, I give my latest opinion on financial stuff, political stuff, and stuff you might like. I'll be uploading my podcast there, and eventually I hope to get some t-shirts or something made, you know, get something going, you know, up there. I also have a link to my Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Tumblr if you guys want to connect and get in touch through me there. I mean, I always respond and like to talk to people and give them some advice, or they can even give me some advice or something like we could talk about on the show. So that's it for this show. I hope you guys enjoyed, and I'll talk to you guys next time. Thank you very much.